On the air once again with Radio Derb. This is your crusty commentator, John Derbyshire, here to bring you news and views from the nation and the world. I'll start with a couple of notes on the candidates for next year's election, though under protest. I'm in the mood to favour a constitutional amendment banning all campaigning until a month before the election. Well, I can dream. Meantime, here's Rudy. Rudy Giuliani has been clarifying his thoughts on immigration and foreign policy. It's a mixed bag. On immigration, he seems to have bought into the notion that the USA needs, and has always needed, and always will need, lots and lots of immigrants. I don't believe that. For the first 20 years after World War II, we took in almost no immigrants, yet the country went along just fine. In fact, we prospered. On the particular matter of illegal immigration, Rudy says, seal the borders, establish a path to citizenship, and set up more guest worker programs, presumably to add to the half dozen or so that we already have. In short, this is basically the Senate bill that we took such pains to defeat last month. On foreign policy, Rudy is good on things like fighting terrorists with covert ops, supposing that our current military and intelligence structures are still capable of covert ops. And he calls for better human intelligence, which is also good, although subject to the same qualification. He's still keen on reforming the world order, though, and he still talks as though the USA has infinite resources. It's great to talk about expanding the military, but when those invoices start coming in for retiring boomers' Medicare and Social Security, we may not be able to afford a military of any size bigger than the Coast Guard. Look, I still count myself a Rudy man. I want to get behind a guy who actually has a shot at winning the Republican nomination, and who strikes me as capable, experienced, and ruthless enough to be president in a dangerous world. Rudy's still my guy. I think he still needs a lot of educating on immigration, though. And so far as the international order is concerned, I'd like a little more humility and realism. But Rudy's still my guy, by a mile. Faute de mieux. Third place Democratic presidential candidate John Edwards has pulled his staff out of Nevada to save money, even though Nevada may hold caucuses before the New Hampshire primary on January 22nd. Right, ho hum. But here was the thing that grabbed me in the news report. Harry Reid, who, as well as being a mealy-mouthed hypocrite and pander, is also the senior U.S. senator from Nevada, said the following thing, quote, "Any candidate who chooses to ignore Nevada and its rich diversity does so at their own peril." End quote. Looking up Nevada, I guess the old fool is referring to the fact that the state is 23% Hispanic, 9% black, and 7% Asian. Well, that's nice for Nevada, but why is it relevant to Edwards pulling his people out? I'm struggling to find a connection here. Perhaps the 120-year-old senator means something like this. We have all these big ethnic groups in Nevada, each one looking to its own group interest, and any candidate who doesn't come here and pander his butt off is going to lose the votes of their co-ethnics in other parts of the country. Well, that's the best I can do by way of parsing Senator Reid's statement, but even that doesn't make much sense. Do Filipino Americans in Manassas, Virginia, really give a fig what Filipino Americans in Elko, Nevada think? Who knows? Ah, the mysteries of diversity. Zimbabwe is in a desperate state. Inflation is running close to 5,000%. Unemployment's around 80%. The economy has pretty much collapsed. Electricity and fuel are in short supply, and people are fleeing the cities because there's no food to be bought. In Bulawayo, the country's second city this week, two people were crushed to death when shoppers stampeded into a store on hearing rumours that the store had sugar for sale. South Africa is talking about building camps for the tens of thousands of Zimbabwean refugees who have flooded in across the border. So, what happened when Robert Mugabe, president for life of Zimbabwe, showed up at a meeting of the 14-nation Southern Africa Development Community? What do you think? They gave him a standing ovation, of course. For taking a country that was once the breadbasket of the region and turning it into a hellhole of hunger, poverty, corruption and oppression, you get a standing ovation from your neighbours. Funny place, Africa. But hey, at least they got free of all those wicked old colonialists. The New York City Police Department has issued a report on the threat from homegrown jihadist terrorism. The report spelled out how people get radicalized, and it urged better intelligence and more vigilance on the part of the public. However, there were a couple of questions that, it seems to me, were left unanswered by the report. For example, since these jihadist ideas originate in a foreign religion, Islam, why don't we just stop admitting foreign Muslims into the USA? It's true that not many Muslims are jihadis, but sympathy for jihadis, as poll after poll has shown, is widespread among ordinary Muslims. This is our country. We can choose whom to admit and whom to politely refuse admittance. Here's another question. Why are Muslim clerics, many of whom are sympathetic to jihadism and some of whom actually preach it, why are these clerics proselytizing in our jails? You have this ideology that preaches violence and hatred for Western society, and you allow it to be preached in jails? Preached to the most violent and antisocial people we've got? Hello? Jihadism is an ideology, not a religion. Why don't we just treat it the way we treated the last dangerous ideology that came down the pike? Communism. Keep out foreigners who profess it, and keep a careful watch on Americans who profess it. But I guess that would be insensitive, hurtful, hate-filled, and all the other slimy little epithets of multiculturalism. The population of Russia is low and shrinking. The ravages of communism, high rates of abortion and alcoholism, poor health care, a terrible climate, and the ancient, deep-seated Russian conviction that human life isn't worth a bent kopeck have combined to make this fine old European nation a demographic sinkhole. Well, the authorities in one region, that is Ulyanovsk, 500 miles or so east of Moscow, have declared a day of conception and ordered everyone to take that day off. It's September 12th. To take the day off to procreate. Couples who give birth 9 months later, on June 12th, will win prizes. Cars, video cameras, and so on. Wait a minute, though. Didn't the Russians try this before, back in Soviet days, with a campaign for heroine of socialist motherhood or something like that? I went looking on Google, or as it is known in Russian, Google. Little Russian literary joke there. And sure enough, here's a website for collectors of Russiana, offering for $80 a, quote, large certificate for the title of Mother Heroine, issued in April 1971, in 8.5-inch by 12-inch hard blue folder with gold lettering on the cover. Nicely decorated citation from the Supreme Soviet of the USSR, similar to the large certificate for the title Hero of the Soviet Union. Shows facsimile signature of the Supreme Soviet Chairman Podgorny. Awarded on 26th of April 1971 to Uldan Mengnarova for giving birth to 10 children and raising them. End quote. Yes, Podgorny, I remember him, though not as well as I remember my favourite Soviet official, sometime chairman of the State Planning Committee, Vinyamin Emanuelovich Dimshitz. The CIA World Factbook tells me that 10 to 15% of Russia's population is Muslim, so you sort of know how this is going to work out in the long run, don't you? Still, good luck to the people of Ulyanovsk on their day off. It's a day off, mind, not a vacation day. No slacking, please. The astronauts on Space Shuttle Endeavour have been getting through a lot of diapers this past few days. A piece of debris knocked off some of the heat shield on Endeavour's underbelly at liftoff, leading to prolonged worries about whether the shuttle could safely re-enter the atmosphere. I have been severely critical of the shuttle programme, which I think is a gross waste of public money, and also, so far, of 14 human lives, in aid of practically nothing at all. Still, I of course don't wish the astronauts any harm, and I hope they will all return to Earth safely. Then, I hope Congress will scrap the whole stupid thing. If those Congress critters, whose pockets are stuffed full of cash from the shuttle contractor companies, can be locked in a congressional bathroom for the duration of the vote. Let's all drink to that, shall we? Cheers. With absolutely no offence to anyone at all, you can't help wondering sometimes if old Fred Nietzsche didn't have a point when he said that Christianity is rooted in a slave morality. Here's the Roman Catholic Bishop of Breda, a region in the Netherlands. The bishop's name is Tiny Muskens, though I think that first name is pronounced in Dutch as Teeny. Teeny, Tiny, whatever. Well, here is what Bishop Teeny Tiny has to say, quote, Allah is a very beautiful word for God. Shouldn't we all say that from now on we will call God Allah? God doesn't care what we call him. End quote. So, faithful Catholics in the Breda diocese are from now on to profess their faith in Allah the Father, Allah the Son, and Allah the Holy Ghost, I guess. How is this going to work exactly? Anyway, under Bishop Teeny Tiny's inspiration, I have decided to revise my own attitude to the Creator of heaven and earth. Out of respect for the Shinnecock, which is the only surviving tribe of Native Americans here on Long Island, I shall henceforth refer to the Almighty as the Great Manitou. Well, there you are, folks. Short measure this week, I'm afraid, but I hope there was enough there to renew your faith that the world is going hopelessly to the dogs, and that we are all doomed, doomed. That's the mood I strive to inculcate. Tune in again next week for more of the dark linings inside all those silver clouds, courtesy of Radio Durham.